This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Ruth, in our last episode, you were talking about coming here and doing various bits of activity with your family and the languages and helping often wives and people from overseas, students and so on who came here. But you travel. As a result of that, you traveled, you said, to South America and to China.
Yes, regularly.
Regularly. So what were those experiences like?
Well, if I start with China.
Yes, go for it.
This was arranged for us by Professor Alex Chu.
Yes.
He's
Malaysian Chinese.
Malaysian Chinese,
had links to China and all the language and connections. And he knew the cultural way to mix, which is very important with China.
Hugely important.
So you learnt a lot of that, or your husband learnt a lot of that?
We were meeting them occasionally socially, Alex and his wife Jenny. And we went along and practiced using chopsticks because we knew we wouldn't be meeting any cutlery while we were in China. We were out in the rural areas of China.
Okay.
We learned that we had to be extremely careful health-wise.
Yes.
But they wouldn't tell us, that the inscrutable Chinese wouldn't tell us what it was, you know, why we had to be careful. We just had to be very careful.
Yes.
John had met one or two of the professors previously on visit when they had been visiting. And off we went, John and
I. So how would you be careful about the food?
Especially, we took with us, on the advice of Alex, surgical wipes. Packets of individual surgical wipes.
Yeah, to wipe your hands
and
disinfect.
Every time we had anything to do with food or drink, we used a wipe to clean our own hands.
Yes.
And then we used another wipe to wipe our crockery, if we had any. The cans, if we had cans of drink.
Yes. You got a can of drink, you'd wipe the outside of the can?
Yes, absolutely, because we didn't know who had been handling them.
Okay.
And the chopsticks.
Yes.
And we just had to be extremely careful.
Yeah.
And so we did this as surreptitiously as we could.
Yeah. That's interesting. My daughter-in-law is Hong Kong Chinese, and she in America, in Britain, wherever, she wipes in a restaurant every time, every utensil.
Probably because of what she's used to. Yeah.
And wherever we went, we were always greeted by a cup of tea, which was a mug with a lid on. It was the first thing, as you know.
Yes.
Our custom is to offer a drink to our visitors.
Yes, so is
theirs.
Yes.
And that we were all right with that because the water had been boiled, and we could just surreptitiously wipe the.
The lid. So did you ever get any upset?
No,
nothing.
Not once.
Got something that would have been a week out of you.
And the very eminent professor who guided us on our first trip carried around with him a small, like a medicine bottle.
With
a cork. Yeah. And he had little coils of cotton wool.
Yeah.
And he must have had surgical spirits. And he was doing exactly the same thing.
Yes.
So he was a bit worried about being out in the wops in China as well.
Yeah, I could understand. Well, I know even sort of Indians who, when they were in India, they could just drink the water and eat the food. But if they've been here for some time and they go back to India, they had to be very careful.
Awful things. Anyway, hepatitis was a big worry.
Yeah.
So, yes, we travelled. all the toilets we used most of the time were holes in the ground.
Which, as a yoga teacher, you would understand, it's good for the body to be...
it's very difficult. It's very difficult when you don't know where to put your feet because people haven't been all that careful before.
Yeah.
And not if there's no door and you're next to the kitchen.
Never a door. Yeah. The first place we stopped for this, we'd been met by... We were going long distances. We'd been greeted at the airport by an interpreter for... it was two couples, an interpreter for myself and the friend who travelled with me.
Yeah,
and the driver. And that might have been it until we actually got inland. We travelled to Hong Kong and then to a city called Kunming, which is... Mm. quite a tourist resort. We were greeted there by the fact that a Japanese tourist had just been knifed.
So yeah.
We thought we'd better try not to look Japanese.
Don't look Japanese. I think that wouldn't be too
not
hard.
To look Japanese while we're in this place.
Yeah.
Oh dear. And then we went on. We drove and drove and drove the next day, but we stopped for lunch.
Yeah.
And they weren't sure quite how to receive us.
Yeah,
you know, it was a two-way thing.
Because they wouldn't have seen many Europeans.
And where we were going, they hadn't seen any. But the people looking after us also.
Yeah, okay.
You know, they'd come from thousands of miles away in China.
Yeah.
Our interpreter, she had travelled for 2 days and nights by train to be with us.
Wow.
Still within China.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
So we had to find somewhere to eat lunch.
So it wasn't even someone from the local area you were going to.
We were going really going bush.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
But we.
So what was your experience with the food?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful food, far better than anything you get in a Chinese restaurant.
Yes.
Even in the poorest places we went to.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it was piping hot and cooked before our eyes and.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
All very fresh ingredients.
Yes, and what we discovered was that the United Nations Development Fund, had thrown money into the local economies to make sure that we were well looked after.
Oh, okay.
So, we were a little bit... We were a little bonus for them. They were getting fed, better. And I remember us driving round and round and round, trying to find somewhere to eat, and they kept looking at places and saying no.
Okay.
And eventually I said to them, because I'd had this experience with them, are you going to eat with us? And they said no. No, we have to find somewhere for you, and then we'll go and...
Okay.
Because
they'd go somewhere cheaper?
Yes, they would eat what they could afford. So we said, all right, you find somewhere that's suitable for you and we'll eat with you.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Because then you get the genuine stuff,
and
probably.
It set the tone for the rest of the trip. Because they were comfortable with us and we were comfortable. We sat on rickety chairs in really, really grubby situations.
Yeah. But you'd sense the whole different... perspective on community that they have in places like
and that. We obviously needed toilets after that, so they drove round and round and round because they didn't know the place we were in. And the place in the end was the public park in the centre, which had one side rows and rows and rows of holes in the ground for the men and the other side rows and rows of holes in the ground for the women.
Yeah.
But the walls were this high.
Well, that's about 30 centimetres high. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so you squat down very low.
So would be very useful.
Yes, so we squatted. And you accumulation of clothes that you didn't want to touch the ground because it really was very insanitary.
Yes.
And when we looked up, the whole town had come to see
what you're doing.
To see what white people looked like when they were using the lavatories, which was quite amusing. Oh dear.
But they were, so they all saw you as a bit of a curiosity, or were they very open and friendly to you? Or?
No, they stood back a bit.
Okay.
the people with it, you know, who were looking after us couldn't have been kinder.
Yeah,
they really couldn't.
Did you sense a political thing then about your foreigners and have you got to be supervised in what you're doing or something?
I think they just trusted us.
Yeah.
There was no way that we could communicate political views or anything else.
Yes.
I mean, I particularly just acted as, they treated me as an honoured guest, and treated them as though I was an honoured guest.
Yeah.
I knew how to do it.
Yeah.
I'd learned how to say I come from from Henley.
You come from?
I lived in Henley.
Yeah.
I use the same technique.
I said,
which means, you must be.
It was obvious. No, wherever we ate, John was honoured guest number one, and I was honoured wife number one. And our poor friends, you know, who was one of John's staff members and his wife, had to be honoured guest number two and honoured wife number two.
And so how was that expressed or shown then? If there's a rigid change in behaviour?
Absolutely rigid. Meals, we were served, we would perhaps be at a dinner organised by the local mayor.
Yeah.
And he was hosting meals, and he would serve John.
This will be in his home, in a restaurant?
No, in a restaurant, yes. Okay. He didn't get into homes. He would serve John, honoured guest number one. And then it was different because it depended who we were with. And then, so having served John and himself and Gambade, down the hatch drink.
Ah, yeah.
Yes, okay. Said a few words. He would then serve honoured wife number one. And
you all had to wait until everyone was served before you eat?
We had to wait until the whole ritual had been gone through.
It didn't really matter, the order.
It absolutely did.
Oh, it's a formality, but in terms of getting to the food, it made no difference.
No, we had to wait until everyone had been around. We learned, each time we went, we learned something new. If it was a fish dish, because it was little dishes coming individually, freshly cooked.
Yeah, yeah.
If it was fish... it was always a curved fish. The head was to the host, and the tail was to honoured guest number one.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Wasn't that interesting?
Yes, I thought the middle would have been better.
Well, it was just yes, but they.
Oh, you mean the amount they ate, or the way it pointed
on the table.
Yes.
Oh,
it was placed.
So one big fish for everybody, and then
one big fish on the table, and it was positioned so that the head was always pointing at honoured host number one, and the tail, and then they served. They took it away to serve it onto plates.
Okay.
But all little things like that. It was very, very hierarchical. Yes. And I had the pleasure of always being honoured wife number one.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're not like that in New Zealand or in Britain.
No.
Actually.
Well, I think that's interesting, given they talk about the communist background of the place, and yet the hierarchies are extremely important.
Well, and they were all communist party members who were dealing with this.
Yes. So did you sense a sort of class structure there?
Oh, well, that was very obvious, yes.
Okay.
Yes, and wherever we went, once we were out in the wilds, the last time we went, it was as a private, it wasn't organised by UNDP, it was a private, it was one of the professors John had met who invited us to go, and he paid for us to go.
Okay.
But wherever he took us, he searched out the Communist Party member who was in charge of the village or the town.
Okay, yeah.
And organised our... Didn't seem to have been done in advance. But
You
know, I've got a BDI.
Yeah. So these trips, they were related to your husband's
It was all grassland research, yes.
Okay,
They were turning old mining areas, slag heaps, trying to turn them into farming areas again.
So while you were being shown around all the nice things, he was looking and seeing how the soils could be improved and
And his research was to really understand how grass grew and how animals ate it and
So again, was his knowledge from the UK and from New Zealand directly applicable to China?
It could be.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
It could be once he was into the hill areas. Yes.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
And he, one of his best moments, he was from this small hill farming background.
Yeah.
He wasn't a showy man at all.
Yes,
he was very
yeah.
humble, and it had an acute brain.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely thrilled one day when he came back to tell me that at the end of a day's teaching through interpreters, one of these farming students in his 30s came across and through an interpreter said to John, "I now understand that the grass is my teacher." And that was one of the most profound things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what John spent his life
trying
to teach.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were nice things. Yes, nice things happened. Yes. Mm. But we were in very incredibly impoverished areas.
Yeah.
And medieval by our standards.
Yeah.
You couldn't tell through in some of the small villages we went through where people ended and animals began. And
But would it seem like strong communities there?
Well, they always came out smiling.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they came out to see who was going through the village, and their faces were always polished.
Yeah,
you know, their clothes and everything else was. But you know, they're,
It's often, you know, we can look and say they don't have a lot of the things that we have, but in some ways, in their community, maybe they've got things that we've lost or we don't have.
They didn't know anything. They didn't know more than in their community.
So that was China.
That was China,
And he went to South America also.
We went to Chile
and
Argentina and Uruguay and southern Brazil, mostly.
Okay.
And John had been to Colombia and Peru previously, in Venezuela. Oh, Venezuela as well, yes.
Okay.
Where they have very strong class systems.
Yes,
The rich are rich and the poor are poor.
Yeah. I saw looking...
But they live more, you know, they live sort of all intermingled and... We were safe in China. We felt safe because we were so closely guarded.
Yeah, yeah.
But in Latin America, everybody has tricky. To be very careful.
You need all the security.
Every minute of every day.
Yes, yeah.
It's dangerous.
Found it interesting. I was in Argentina and I saw, compared to New Zealand, things like population density and the economy, not so different.
No.
But the whole difference in outcome comes from things like the pattern of land ownership and the nature of government.
Yes,
and so
absolutely.
Yeah, it makes a massive difference.
Yes, and we helped out in Chile through an old postgraduate student of John's from very early on in our life. He had created with the government for the millennium scholarship.
Okay.
And they were awarding scholarships to different branches of education.
Okay.
And
Claudio
invited John to go and judge the agricultural projects that were presented. And a German couple were there, and he was part of the team that created the lithium battery. So that was his science.
Yeah.
And so we two wives, she didn't speak English, and knew a bit of schoolgirl French, and I knew a bit of Spanish, and a bit of schoolgirl French, but we had quite a nice time together. But silly things, the first night, they went out for a walk.
The German couple,
before dinner.
Yeah.
And he felt a hand in his trouser pocket.
Yes, yeah.
And he got mad.
Yes.
And turned and chased, you know, an urchin.
Yeah,
this is
like
Charles Dickens.
Yes,
he chased this child along the street, tripped on the curb and fell.
Yeah.
He broke his nose.
Oh.
He ruined his trouser knees.
Yeah.
And arrived late for dinner.
Yeah.
And the child had stolen his hanky.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, that was just a very simple...
Yeah,
and he couldn't... He was a tall, rather proud-looking man, and they must have seen him as a good target.
Yeah, for a while, I suppose that he wouldn't know what was in the pocket and just grabbed for whatever they could.
But we had been going often enough, to know not to have anything in our pockets.
And to be
keeping our eyes open.
But
lovely people, and very hospitable. And with my Spanish, however bad, when I'm speaking in Spanish, I become a different personality.
Well, that's it with languages, isn't it?
It's wonderful. If you
learnt it, not so much as you're translating in your head and doing it, but if you're speaking, you know something.
Well,
once
you get to grips with the with the accent and the voice, which would horrify my.
Yeah. I got in the times when you get films on a DVD, and there was one that was, you could play it in any of about 7 different languages, and you change the language. Language and the whole tone of the film changes because of the nature.
Yes, yeah. We were taken. We actually went with to look after James McCall.
His wife, who was vice chancellor.
Yes,
here,
and John had guided him during the week when the university was choosing the new vice chancellor.
Yeah,
John had been his mentor.
Right. Okay.
And then because of my Spanish, I was invited to go along to help his wife when the men were off doing their manly thing. And this was actually in Argentina. We were creating memoranda of understanding.
Yeah.
She was finding it quite difficult. And I was used to this idea that when you stopped at traffic lights, you'd be surrounded by small impoverished urchins trying to sell you matches and needles and any shoelaces and anything.
So you spent quite a lot of time overseas on these trips.
Yes, well, it was usually a month each time, and it was happening once a year for a while.
Yeah.
So why was there a concentration on China and South American countries and not
other? I think other people were probably doing the other countries. But John was doing this on top of, his head of department work.
Yeah.
And at one stage he had 14 PhD students that he was a busy man.
Yes.
And this was, so we never had holidays at that time because he regarded these trips as his holiday.
Yeah. I think actually with China, there was a lot of the development and links with China because they were growing so much and they needed the tertiary input.
Yes, and we had Alex Chu, who was just immensely useful.
Yes, and a lot of joint projects with Chinese universities. And then with South America, I think probably just because it's in the same hemisphere and so on, the agricultural things might have overlapped a lot.
And John, I can boast about John. He would never ever boast about himself, but he was writing the textbooks that they were using.
Yeah. Oh, well, so that makes
so,
sense.
Yes.
Yes.
And they were reading his scientific papers. So that was the link, really.
Yeah.
I mean, he brought a lot of kudos to Massey in his own quiet way.
Yeah. So all that sort of thing then, so you had, 40-odd years now in Palmerston North, just about, but with a lot of overseas links at the same time.
Yes.
Bringing a lot back.
Yes.
And Palmerston North's been a good base for all that.
Well, it's very similar to my hometown in England. There was the same size population, which is called Grimsby.
It's similar to Grimsby. You see, my impression is that
it was the same size,
but my impression is that because Britain had the heavy population density, you get a lot of things all condensed together. But Palmerston North, for a place this size, it had a lot of facilities that you would expect to see in a much larger place in Britain. The number of universities here, the idea of the museum and the science centre and the professional theatre and those sorts of things.
So we chose in Britain, wherever we live, we chose, if possible, to be where the children could run to school.
Yes.
Because that's what we had grown up with.
Yes.
And... I'd cycled to and from school always, and Palmerston North had the same size population.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, they don't look anything like the same.
Yeah.
Britain is an industrial country.
Yeah.
And when people told me where I needed to be careful and where the slum areas were in Palmerston North, I went and thought, well, these look like good.
Yes, there's not that much of an established class difference.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.